The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
He is Dan Menigan. I'm Andy Baskin. Meredith Cain's hanging out with us as well. 216-474-0092. Obviously a gigantic win, a historic win for the Ohio State football team on Saturday night as they were able to down Tennessee. The next stop is in the Rose Bowl, and they will take on Oregon for a rematch and try to beat them for the first time this season after losing by 1 point earlier in the year. Let's bring in a former running back, a guy I call a good friend that I see on a postgame report on Spectrum News 1 after pretty much every Ohio State game. He is Antonio Pittman, and he is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Oh, yeah, by the way, he was an NFL running back, too. And he is your friendly neighborhood firefighter if you're living in Central Ohio. Hello, my friend. How are you?
What's happening, Antonio?
Good. How you doing?
I'm good. You gotta be feeling good, right, Antonio? I mean, like, remember how down we were after we talked after the Michigan game? And I mean, dude, you were on a roll. Someone, you got to find it somewhere if you didn't see what he was saying after the game. And then I kept thinking about you on Saturday night, going, I wonder what Antonio thinks about this. And when they were up 21-0, I said, Antonio's got to be watching this game, saying to himself, where was this against Michigan?
Absolutely, man. I actually attended the game with my three daughters and my lady, and I can honestly say, next to the game of the century, it was the loudest I've ever heard that stadium. The excitement, I think they actually got the programming right. In between plays, whenever Tennessee had the ball, they kept the music going up until the quarterback got up under the center. They kept the crowd engaged the whole time, so it was never really a down period. And then the game started off with excitement, so it was just momentum to continue to build. And I think that also helped, you know what I mean? But Chip Kelly came out with an excellent game plan. I think the game plan that they had on the defensive end was brilliant. They just kept them off balance and kept them on their toes, and I think they produced enough. But it was also what we've been expecting all year long, especially with the talent that they have.
You know what's interesting that you noticed that? Because the thing I noticed, and I brought this up to Tyvus Paul yesterday, that, you know, at halftime, Tennessee's pushing the ball down the field. They're right in front of South stands, right? And they're about to score. And I'm looking at this gaping hole that normally is where the marching band sits.
Yeah.
And they were getting ready for halftime, so they were gone. And I was like, do you know how hard it would be to try to run your offense in front of that best damn band in the land playing at full decibels? Like, I was like, oh, I wish the marching band was here. It was just, you know, those are weird little things that I think sometimes we notice that make things really uncomfortable for the other team. Didn't matter the way they played for the rest of the game, but, man, it was just one of those things I noticed in the game. But it was interesting to hear what you just said about the music.
But 100%, like when you factor in everything, I do think the creativity of the college football playoffs, the weather played a factor into the fact that a lot of the older fans decided not to attend. And it felt like a college stadium, like a true college town, because you had a lot of young, energized energy in the building at key spaces in the stadium where it normally wouldn't be that. So it was loud all over it, as opposed to just being both end zones, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to say that, too, especially during break.
Yeah, the college students were spread out throughout the stadium, so the noise was evenly balanced, opposed to it just being in one place to where we were kind of stuck at where you would get dead moments in the game. Like, it was very exciting. I really think that coming off that Michigan loss, being down, I really do think that they took heed to what people were saying, and I think they recognized the flaws and understood the assignment. If this team continues to play at that level with that energy, I don't think they can be beat.
Hmm. So how many Tennessee fans were in the building?
It was way too many for my comfort.
20,000 plus?
Yeah.
It was a lot, especially when you look into the AA portion of the stadium. Mm-hmm. Like, they were really, really low. You know what I mean? I have pretty good seats, and I was sitting next to maybe 15, 20 of them.
It's just weird because normally when you go to a game and you see the other team there, there's a little pocket of fans that would be like on the north, northwest side, maybe, is that what you should say? And there's a little pocket there, and then there's always a little pocket in south stands, and then you don't, it's all scarlet and gray. And when they were showing the drone shots at the beginning of the game, I was like, I cannot believe how many Tennessee fans made it inside the stadium for this thing.
Yeah, it was pretty shocking. I understand. You know what I mean? I'm not one of them people that just be like, oh, man, they shouldn't have. If you're going off of what you've seen the last game, mm-hmm. I don't blame them for selling the tickets. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted to pay all that money and be let down. But I honestly feel like up until my first Michigan game that I attended, which was the 0-2 season that they won the national championship, mm-hmm. The game of the century in that game was the top three. Of my OSU experience.
Wow.
The Texas game when Vince Young was in the stadium, it was electrifying, but it just wasn't that. Like, December football, Ohio weather, in the shoe, scarlet, and they did everything right from the lighting to the sound effects to the keeping the crowd engaged. I mean, it was like a perfect setting, like, for them to go out there and capitalize on this opportunity.
Antonio Pittman joining us on the Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, former Buckeyes running back, now does postgame on Spectrum 1 for the Buckeye games. So, Antonio, do you think the offense's, we'll call it improvement, was it something schematic that you think that changed, or was it just flat out a philosophy?
It was just flat out a philosophy, but I think you have to get back to the X's and O's. What we've been calling for all season, a lot of motion and just trying to get a read of the coverage, the double, using both backs, using some play actions, taking your underneath routes, your checkdowns, and then taking advantage of the big plays when you have the opportunity. That's key, and that's football. That's X's and O's and taking advantage and keeping the defense off balance. And that's what they did. Every time they had a one-on-one shot, they went for Jeremiah Smith. Like, I'm not even mad at the interception, because that could have went either way. It could have been a touchdown, could have been a pass interference, but the guy just made a hell of an interception. You know what I mean? Like, he made a hell of a play on the ball. That was an NFL play that he made on the ball.
Yeah.
But I'm not mad at them taking that shot, because it didn't give us bad field position on defense. Like, it didn't really hurt us in a sense. It didn't help, but it didn't hurt either. But it also kept the team. I mean, like, that's the type of stuff you applaud for, because in the Michigan game, you didn't see those chances.
Yeah, there was something, I don't want to say comforting, but when you look at what perhaps could be the best freshman to ever play at Ohio State, when Jeremiah Smith caught that first touchdown pass, especially, I mean, like, that first drive could have gone sideways really quick. Remember, they had to take a timeout on that drive, then they got the face masking call, and the next thing you know, you're down the field and you're scoring five plays, 75 yards, right? And then your defense comes out and goes three and out, not once, but twice. And so I know we want to talk about how the offense was able to hang 42 points, but man, that defense set the stage in the game on Saturday night like they haven't all season long.
Yeah, 100%. That middle linebacker play was excellent. I think he finished the game like 12 or 13 tackles. He was all over the ball, the constant pressure from Sawyer and JT. I mean, I think they dialed up the right scheme. I mean, you ran a couple stunts and you got free off those stunts. And the guys just wanted it. I mean, I think they might have had a come to Jesus moment, and I think some real conversations was held after the Michigan game. And you know, hopefully, this is a carry on for the rest of the playoffs. I really do think that they assembled the best roster in college football. I do think it's pretty balanced across the board. I don't think anyone's like super dominant, but I do feel as if that defense playing at that level, the offense clicking on all cylinders, I do not think that they can be beat moving forward if they play to the same level.
So then let's spin it forward to the Rose Bowl up against Oregon once again. What is the one thing that needs to change from the first time they went up against Oregon?
A turnover. That was the key thing in Oregon. He lost a turnover battle. And I think that kind of hurt because that stalled. The fumble by Junkins early in the game, I think that kind of stalled the momentum of a drive that could have ended with at least a touchdown or two. You know what I mean? I think that's the difference of having to figure out what plays to call in crunch time.
Mm. I mean, I just go back and I think, you know, we all remember the last play where Will Howard didn't get down on the ground fast enough, but still, I mean, he was 28-35 for 326 yards, had two touchdowns in that game, too. And the other part of it, when I think about the Oregon game, is, you know, Ohio State's played, what, this will be the fifth time that they've played a top-10 team. They are 3-4 in those games against top-10 teams this year, and it's only by 1 point.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, I know everyone, like, people got... You're so hung up, not you personally, but everybody hung up on the Michigan game that sometimes I think you got to look at this thing from the moon and go, wait a minute, look at this. They beat how many teams that were in the top five at the time when they played them, and now all of a sudden you lost the one game to the team that was number one at the end of the year, and now you get a chance at redemption? Like, I just feel like this whole thing is the redemption tour. You needed to beat Tennessee and beat them the way you did to – feel redemption against Michigan, and now you get a chance, another shot at Oregon. And by the way, no one has beat a team, an Ohio State team, twice since 1894 in the same season. Pretty incredible. Now, how did we lose him? I know the line was kind of going back and forth. I think we lost him. Yeah, bummer.
Yeah, that is. I always love talking to Antonio.
All right, maybe we can reconnect with Antonio and bring him back in, and we'll bring him back in. But, I mean, Antonio's perspective on this is, I mean, when it's time to be harsh, Antonio is harsh, man, and he tells it the way it is. And I think that's why I appreciate his whole perspective on the way he looks at the buck. I mean, I spend, you know, half the season with him breaking down these Ohio State football games, and if there's anything that you were trying to think or trying to figure out, well, am I seeing this right, or am I being too much of a fan, or am I trying to look at this game from it, he brings you right back in it, and he brings you right back in it as a guy that's suited up for the Buckeyes, played in the NFL, totally gets it and understands it, and you're like, I got to listen to what he, and a guy that never lost to Michigan. That was another thing. I think that's why he was so upset about the way they lost to Michigan.
Oh, man, he came in with a blowtorch after that Michigan loss. I mean, it was unbelievable the way that he was just like, this is horrendous, this is inexcusable, things need to change, philosophy needs to change. And from what it sounds like, they made those changes, from what it looked like, too. I mean, the way that they got the running game involved, the way they got that going, the way that, I mean, frankly, man, Will Howard, at some point, it's one of those you even during that Michigan game, you kind of wanted to like grab him and be like, dude, you have Emeka Egbuka, Jeremiah Smith, throw the ball up to them. Just throw the ball up. Let those guys make plays. They're talented enough to do it. I mean, if Smith was in the draft this year, we would probably be talking about him as a first rounder, and he's a freshman.
A high first rounder, too.
So, like, just every so often with those guys, in the same way that you do with NFL wide receivers that are at the top tier, you just throw a ball up to them every so often and go, hey, go be better than the guy defending you.
Antonio, you there? You back?
Yeah, I'm back.
All right, Antonio.
All right,
good to have you back.
Back on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Obviously, there was a Michigan fan that was tampering with the line, and now we can hear you clear as day.
Oh, good golly. Good golly.
So, like I was just saying, like the historic part of this game, and it's a traditional Rose Bowl. It's a, you know, a normally a Pac-12 team going up against a Big Ten team, and the challenge that's sitting there as a part of this redemption tour for Ohio State.
Yeah, 100%. I think the goal is to get the kid back, win the game. But overall, I think them putting together a dominant performance would be key, just for everybody's sake. I think for my sake, I think for Buckeye Nation. But I do think that the job can be done.
Let's talk about the way they were able to run the ball, and that both, you know, Trayvon and Quinshon were able to get in the end zone multiple times in that game. Will they be able to do that against Oregon? And how beneficial is that to putting Will Howard in a spot where he can just be great and not have to throw the ball down the field, you know, 50 yards?
I think The game plan going into Tennessee was crucial because they went with the hot hand. And in crucial situations and key moments, you seen when Travion came in, it wasn't just a pass-first type offense. It was a lot of play action. And then when they did give him the ball, they were able to get him to the corners opposed to running him up the gut like they were doing in the Michigan game, to where everyone was super confused about it. But I think when Junkins came in, he has that ability to break a long one, but he's your guy that's going to grind it out. He's going to get you a tough 3-5 yards, a pop. And that's what you need to keep the defense honest, because 2nd and 6 looks a lot better than 2nd and 10. Or 3rd and 3 is a lot better than 3rd and 6. You know what I mean? And your play calling changes, and we were able to keep the ball moving. And I think that's what helped Will Howard get into a better groove, help this offense get rolling and start getting things clicking.
What were your thoughts just on the whole – on the first weekend of the play? Like, I thought it was awesome. Ohio State home game for the playoffs. Dan and I had a big debate about this, about whether they should add 4 more teams so that they can just play everybody, all 8 play on that first weekend. Your thoughts on the way this thing played out and what you think it's going to look like in the future? I mean, yes, we still have a couple more games to go, but what do you think of the way it started and where are we going with this?
If you add a couple more teams and all 8 play, I think you have to come up with a situation to end the non-conference games, which would essentially hurt everything else moving forward with the smaller schools, like the MAC schools coming into Columbus or going to Alabama and taking those big payouts that actually helped their budgets throughout the course of their year. Because I do think adding more games would just prolongs the season. They'd be almost playing until February now. you know what I mean? If you add another week.
So what I'm saying, I mean, even if you don't do it that way, just say you have the 4 teams that sat out this week play. Yeah. And so maybe 4 of the games are on Friday and 4 of the games are on Saturday.
I don't know
if you can do that, though. You would need Thursday night games to do that, too.
Yeah, you would need that. But I also think that if you change the format, I think, like, Oregon being a higher seed, I don't think it's fair that they have to go play in a neutral crowd against Ohio State, who's going to travel very well out to Pasadena. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I do think that game should be back in Oregon. Like, the top seed should have a home game. So the first 2 rounds need to be home games for the higher seed, and then that final, then you have the 2 opportunities to go on the road and play at one of the Sugar Bowl, or, you know what I mean, the Cotton Bowl.
So keep the national semifinals where they are, just eliminate this round of bowl games. It's just hard to think of the Rose Bowl sitting out for a year, you know what I'm saying, without being significant.
Give those bowls back to the teams that don't make the playoffs, and you'll get more players that won't opt out. Because guys will want that ring or that opportunity to play in the Rose Bowl. You're looking for a guy that won, like, I won 2 Big Ten championships and never played in the Rose Bowl, ever.
Because you were good.
Yeah, but I would have loved to play in a Rose Bowl. I mean, I grew up, and you see the pictures of Orlando Pace with a rose in his mouth. You know what I mean? Like, I always wanted that moment. And that's, like, that's a true college football moment for guys that know, because that was a Big Ten Pac-10 bowl.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting to see. I didn't think of it the way you did. So I just the seating has got to change a little, though. Like what we're watching. And the other part of it was, if you do add more teams, all 4 games this weekend, the winning team, the home team, was the winning team, and they were all up by 21 at one point. So if you were going to redo this, you would have both the first and second round on home site. So if you
100%.
That Ohio State should be going to Oregon and not to the Rose Bowl. We argued about this neutral site thing.
The best team? Like, what's the advantage? You know what I mean? Like, neutral sites can be for the round after that. But as far as if I'm the number 1 seed and I get to sit home and have a week off and watch all these other teams build momentum and play on their home field, and I don't get that opportunity, and I got to get steamrolled with a team like with an Ohio State team coming in here off that victory with that momentum at a neutral site, I don't have nothing to equalize that.
You're a good man, Antonio.
Yeah,
just want you to know, you're a good man.
We had this argument yesterday, and I'm like, how can you not play at a neutral site when you have the opportunity? I just think that the schools have such an opportunity to make a lot of money here, too. That money, they're not paying it to the Rose Bowl. It's going right back to the schools because they're hosting.
Let's talk about how downtown High Street was packed. Like, you don't get that in December weekend.
No,
you know what I mean? You don't get that. I mean, I'm talking packed. I mean, the Tennessee fans came down here. They were gracious. No one that I've seen disrespected them, and They got out of the stadium without getting disrespected. Even had a couple conversations with them, and they were like, hey, y'all are some really good fans. Like, seriously, like I would have, if this was the opposite way and y'all were in Tennessee, we wouldn't have handled y'all this gracefully.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? And that was an honest.
That's what happens when you hang 42 on them.
You got to be,
you're up 21-0 at the end of the first quarter, you're like, oh, well, it was a good five-hour drive. We got to go home after this. Antonio, yeah. You know I love talking to you about Ohio State football. Happy holidays to you and your family and your very athletic family as well. So we will talk soon, my friend.
Hey, same to y'all. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays,
take care.
Antonio.
Antonio
Thanks,
Pittman,
man.
Former Ohio State running back, former NFL running back. 92.3 The Fan. His name is Dan Menigan. Mine's Andy Baskin. He's sitting in for Jeff today. Jeff will be back after the holiday here, and I'll be taking a little bit of time off here too as well. So, Dan, you have to work every day.
Yeah, that checks out.
Congratulations to you.
No, that happens to the best of us.
216-474-0092.
It's just going to be Meredith and I.
That's okay. Meredith, are you good with
sitting
that?
Here,
just you and
by.
Dan? Hanging with Dan?
Running everything.
Day? Just hanging with Dan.
Oh, I didn't realize I was part of this. Am I?
You are now.
Okay.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
Welcome on in.
All right.
We just got you a huge raise. You didn't even know that.
I have not seen it yet.
Oh, is
the raise in Imagination Land?
Oh, it was the part where you didn't have your headset on. We told you how much more you were getting.
Sure.
If you would have said yes, you'd get it, but I guess you didn't react
just too
fast
late.
Enough.
Early bird, you know that thing.
Apparently it's in some other timeline.
That is true.
Exactly.
It's in a different universe.
It's in one of the multiverses.
All right, so you were very happy during this interview with Antonio Pittman. Set it up.
Yeah, darn right. Antonio Pittman, a smart man and a great man for a lot of different reasons, including the fact that he is a firefighter down in Columbus, and we thank him for that and his thoughts as well. You can catch him on Spectrum One doing the post-game show with Andy, where he will make such brilliant and well-thought-out points like this.
If I'm the number one seed and I get to sit home and have a week off and watch all these other teams build momentum and play on their home field, and I don't get that opportunity, and I got to get steamrolled with a team like with an Ohio State team coming in here off that victory with that momentum at a neutral site, I don't have nothing to equalize that.
My point was that I don't mind these neutral site games just because I think it's a part of the history and tradition of college football. And although I think it's the bigger bowl games that are the history and the tradition. Like
Correct.
Some of these things, I look at some of these bowls, I'm like, Myrtle Beach Bowl. Well,
yeah,
I would like to go to Myrtle Beach. I'm not going to lie about that. But there was no one at that game yesterday.
Nobody sitting there today going, the fine memories of the Hawaii.
It'd be awesome if you got to go.
Well, without question. You would then have those memories. But, yeah, it's not like we're sitting there rolling highlights of the Hawaii Bowl.
No.
You know, it's not like we're rolling highlights of the Idaho Potato Bowl that took place yesterday.
Well, if you live in Boise, you would. You'd Correct. Be excited about it. Yeah, but
sure. But, yeah. That's
I'm okay with the neutral site. Like, I love the fact that the Rose Bowl feels like it's a Rose Bowl this year. That it's Ohio State against Oregon. It's Big Ten. I know Oregon's in the Big Ten, but it just feels like, you know, Big Ten against, you know, Pac-12. And so you've got that traditional feeling. I like the way things kind of played out this weekend. I do think Antonio makes a good point, though, that maybe instead of Texas-Arizona being the Peach Bowl, Ohio State-Oregon being the Rose Bowl, Penn State and Boise State being the Fiesta Bowl, and Notre Dame and Georgia being the Sugar Bowl, that maybe this game should be at Arizona State. Maybe this game should be at Oregon. Maybe this game should be at Boise.
Yes.
I mean, could you imagine Penn State going to Boise playing on the Smurf Turf?
Awesome.
Notre Dame at Georgia.
Yes.
That seems okay. I'm like,
awesome.
I can kind of smell that.
That's what we want. So this is the thing. This industry, and Dan Retzel, probably about, that book has got to be close to 10 years old now, wrote a book called The Death of the Bulls. There's something along those lines is the name of it. And he basically took you behind the scenes of the bowl industry and how much of a, you know, backslapping, free golf, free yacht
you'd
rides.
Oh, you see these guys show up with their jackets
planes.
On in the press box all the time. Yeah,
like how much of this stuff plays into it. And,
right.
And it's a wonderful book. It's a great read. And it basically opens your eyes to the fact that these bowl games are pointless and the best thing that college football can do is get away from the bowls.
But they're not
run away from it.
Hang on. They're not pointless to the cities that are hosting them.
Correct. Correct. I'm talking from the cronyism side of it.
Okay.
And all the cronies, right? That's the part of it that I'm pointing at. The best thing that college football can do would be to do something that they don't do well, which is to look money dead in the face and say, we're good. What they would need to do is these games should be at the home stadiums. I'm sorry. Like, Oregon should have this game here. Boise should have it. Like, at least give me the first two rounds where everybody gets a home game. The higher seeds all get home games. And then if you want to say, hey, the national championship, we will play that at the Rose Bowl, and we will play that at the Sugar Bowl, and we'll play that at the Peach Bowl, fine. I can live through that. I will get over it. But everybody should at least get one home game.
Well, you can easily do that if you add four more teams.
I need more of a sample size before we start adding teams.
You could add four more teams and everyone would get a home game, but it takes away the winning of the conference championship. That's where you're – like, I understand – I totally get this whole theory of rewarding the conference champion.
Right. And,
but what happens is the ranking of a team may not coincide – with the seed of a team, and that's what we saw this weekend. You know, if you think about it, right?
I mean, yes, and this is the best version of an imperfect thing that we have here. Like, what we have right now, and I think they should maybe bring the computer into it a little bit with the strength of schedule and all of that kind of stuff to figure out instead of just completely relying on the committee to lay out 12 teams.
But that shouldn't matter if you win your conference championship. In fact, right. I actually think it should be a regular season champion that gets the – why are we – I know that they've got to have the bowl championship at the end, the conference championship, but you know how much harder it is to win a regular season title than it is to win, you know, like one or two games at the end of the year to put someone in there? Right. Yes, you got to get – like Ohio State felt
gotta
this year.
Got to get there.
Yeah.
Got to get there, which – there's something to it being able to get there.
Having an extra week off to prepare probably didn't hurt Ohio State in the way that you're like, oh, I don't want them ever to lose to Michigan, but the fact that they didn't have to play in the Big Ten, and I know the goal was to play in the Big Ten Conference Championship and get the bye, but if you listen to what Antonio said, yeah, man, there could be an advantage to not making it, still being one of the teams that makes it in. You get an extra week of rest, an extra week of preparing. Now, you lose that extra week of rest now, so like Oregon sat out last week. But Ohio State has momentum. That momentum, though, can end in three plays.
Right, and again, the Rose Bowl is cool. I love the Rose Bowl. I have many memories. My, you know, sitting there and watching the Parade of Roses with my mom, who loves every last bit of it, and then sitting there and watching the game later on and all of that stuff, and, you know, Keith Jackson and everything else that comes with the Rose Bowl and the glory of it. But this game should be in Eugene. I'm sorry. It just should. This game in Eugene would be awesome.
Let me bring up a fact that I was talking about before we go to break here. So I said Ohio State's only lost three times in the history of the program to a team twice in the same season. I gave you the year before. The last time it happened was 1894. 1894. That's the last time Ohio State lost twice to the same team. If you go back and look... the three schools that have done it are all Ohio schools, too. Oberlin did it in 1892. Dan, I was not at that game. In 1893, Kenyon beat Ohio State twice.
You were there?
No. Okay. And in 1894, they were just calling for Frederick Rider's head after he lost to Wittenberg twice in the same season, 1894. I remember the stone tablets being passed out that Sunday morning afterwards. People were going, read it here! Frederick Rider needs to go. See you later. I think that's it.
I'd love to find somebody like posted like the piece of that somewhere of like some sports writer and just read the language that's in there. It just reading all that old writing like that is awesome. It's just so cool. Like you read those old Grantland Rice pieces and that stuff and it blows you away.
We're going to wrap up the show. We'll get ready for the holiday here. We got a lot of stuff that we want to just wind down and we'll do that when we come back here. 216-474-0092 Baskin and Phelps with Dan Menigan.